Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is me, Jonathan Alexander, and I'm here to host our show, Life, Laughter, Happiness. Today, I have my co-host, Barbara. Are you there, Barbara?
Yes, I'm here. Hi, everybody.
Hello. Now, this is a special show because this is the first time we've ever had my family on. I have my sister, Cassie. Are you there, Cassie?
I'm here.
And I have my sister, Chrissy. Are you there, Chrissy?
I'm here, too.
Now,
wow.
I talk about this before in the air, is that I'm on the autistic spectrum, and it seems to run in our family a little bit, especially with males, it seems. And, you know, I was thinking about it today. One of the things that's really weird about it is that when I was growing up, no matter what happened to me, I was always the different one. I always wanted to be doing something that nobody else was doing, like, you know, taking big wheels and turning them over and spinning, you know, candy thermometers and making loud noises and saying strange things to people that are socially inappropriate or whatever it is. And, you know, Cassie and Chrissy, I'm sure, remember a lot of this because they have lots of stories, you know. I mean, it's like, and I guess the thing is that I bought on my sister Chrissy because Chrissy has two children herself that are on the spectrum. And Cassie probably remembers some of the stuff that happened when I was growing up. Like, maybe she can't explain it, but she remembers some of the stuff, like the spinning and the... I mean, you remember the big wheel, right, Cassie?
Oh, absolutely. He always had it turned upside down so he could spin the wheels and the pedals and stuff like that.
I know.
Is the big wheel, is this that large one that you sit on or the little toy, tiny one, the big wheel?
The kind you would normally sit on, but he normally did not want to sit on it. He would turn it upside down and spin the wheel. He would always do that, spinning pedals and spinning wheels on objects. That's pretty much, Johnny was very interested when he was a kid in things like dinosaurs, spinning objects, any kind of spinning objects, you know, you give to Johnny. He would just sit there and just start spinning them. He was kind of a quiet child. When he was first born, I'm his older sister. I'm 3 years older than Johnny. And so I don't remember right when he was born, but I do remember when he was, you know, a small child. And I remember when he was very little. I remember my parents were very worried about him, and they talked about him a lot and some of his, you know, his problems. And I was too little. I was only like three or four years old, so I was too young to really understand what they were talking about. But he basically went through eye surgeries. How many eye surgeries did you have, Johnny? Like six or something?
Oh, I don't know, but I've been in the hospital like 10 times. I mean,
he had eye surgery.
A lot of surgery.
He had crossed eyes when he was a baby.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you would never even know that now.
Yeah, you would. Wow. He had I want to say like five or six surgeries, even as an infant. They had him getting surgeries to uncross his eyes. And so... I just remember my parents were young, and they had us when they were pretty in their, you know, early to mid-20s, and so they had four kids in 5 years, and they had Johnny. And Johnny, in addition to, you know, what we talked about, the autism spectrum, Johnny had cerebral palsy as well.
Yeah.
And that's the main thing that you know, I know that they, you know, focused on with him, that he had some of the physical fine motor issues. He had the, like I said, the crossed eyes and the surgeries that he had on his eyes. He had some more physical things. Like, he's always been able to walk and stuff like that. He never had problems with that, but it was more like fine motor skills, like writing and things like that, penmanship. It was difficult for him as a kid. So when he got older and got a computer, he could type very fast. You know, that was great. But he had trouble like holding a pen or a pencil and writing. That was hard for him. He could do it, but it was hard for him.
Okay, so was it hard for you as sisters to watch? Because I know you love him so much, and he's your little sweet brother, and he's going through all these surgeries, and you watch the parents
you know, I was too
worried.
Little to appreciate what they what was going on. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I was like
yeah.
3 when he was born. Not even not quite 3 when he was born. And so I think now that I'm older, I really have an appreciation of what he went through and what
right.
my sister's going through now with her children.
Actually,
he was just my brother, right? I didn't know
mm-hmm.
he was
sort of,
right.
What's sort of funny is I remember one time, I think it was Cassie had a thing with her eyes. I think it was like her eyes were burning or something. You know, you remember that?
It was suntan lotion.
Yeah,
it was suntan.
Everybody's
I remember you telling
that.
Me. You said that Donnie. Yeah. After I went through that, I appreciate what you went through. Because that was like
that was terrible, Cassie.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah,
so,
I do.
Yeah.
I like burned it. I think it was like Michelog cream or something. But yeah, I
oh,
did.
Yeah.
That was bad. But yeah, he was. It was hard. And then my brother. The other thing with him is that he always went to different schools than us. So I never went to school with my brother the entire time, you know, we were kids. He was always going to
yeah.
like a private school or a special school. So I didn't have
right.
like that interaction at school with him the way I did my other sister, for example.
So you never saw him, and if he was teased or he was going through a hard time with a teacher, I know he told me a teacher was not good to him. And but your mom came to his rescue, which is so wonderful, and then started homeschooling him. But if you ever
mm-hmm.
did see something like that, this must have really been painful to watch.
It was, but that was more something that I figured, you know, what I more noticed when I was older. And I didn't, and it happened very seldom because, like I said, I was not around him in a situation where, you know, we were at school. Or things like that with a bunch of other kids. It was either situations where there's other adults who would, you know, who were mature and would behave.
Okay.
Versus at a situation where, you know, I never went to school with them. So I never really saw, other kids, you know, talking about them or whatever. But Johnny, the thing is, people really, you know, you're not going to meet a finer person than Johnny. I mean, I've known him his entire life, and he has
yeah.
never said a bad word about me, had any ill intent, said any nasty words about anybody or anything. I mean, and literally, I've known him his entire life. He just is not
mm-hmm.
like that. He's just he really is that good of a person. Okay. I mean, it's very unusual, but he really is just truly a extremely fine person, and you're not going to, and he doesn't have that chip in him to be a bad person or to say nasty things, to be bad and or whatever. He's just not wired that way. And
his
so,
heart is pure, I think is the best
yeah.
way to say it. Yeah, his heart is just so pure.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
just what, you know, yeah.
He doesn't know. And then what I was going to say is I think the main thing in terms of, so in terms of Johnny, what I remember more is the physical issues with the cerebral palsy, him going to different schools, him spinning, you know, him having, he walked, I think my mom said, when he was 17 months old. He talked, I think, at a normal age, you know, the way age we talked, whereas my nephews, I think, talked later. But he, you know, more the physical stuff. And back then, they did not use the word autism to describe what my brother had back then. In the 80s and the 70s, they weren't throwing the word autism around. They've expanded the definition, I think, of autism, where it used to be more
mm-hmm.
pure. Now I think they've got a bigger definition. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, what did they call it? What did they think was going on, or did they not know? Which does cause
they
worry
would just
if you don't
call,
really know.
It, Cassie, and you probably know too, or remember back. I mean, when we were in school, they basically would umbrella all the kids that were had any sort of differences just under the MR, which is a word now that is not a nice, you know, word, and it's thrown around in a negative way. But they would use the word mental retardation, and that was just sort of the umbrella diagnosis that they would give to everybody that had any differences. And so, you know, they would base it on IQ, of course, and they would look at all that when it came to, you know, MR diagnosis. But I know that if, you know, my boys were born, you know, in the 70s or in the, you know, that's kind of what they would be put under. This sort of
right.
umbrella blanket diagnosis, you know, just unable to do much of anything. And then they're just sort of put into a category. But, and I think, I guess that's the benefit of the autism diagnosis and how it's sort of, expanded, is that there's a range of abilities. And yeah. So I think that they see now that there are abilities that are there that may have been ignored or pushed to the side because of the limitations. So the limitations aren't shadowing the other positives out as much anymore. And so they're focusing
on
therapy.
Yes, and there's a lot of positives.
Right, and lifting them up, you know, instead of just focusing on what they can't do. I think they're focusing more on what they can do, and they're seeing more success stories with all the intensive therapy and the early intervention that they do. So I think that,
you know,
because of that, it's getting more attention, yeah.
Like, for example, you know, when it was sort of funny because, like, Dan, you know, when he would do things that were socially not exactly right, but he would get away with it. Like, you know, he would, like, call me on the phone, and he would say, "Hey, Johnny, this is Van. I'm your cute little nephew. How are you doing?"
Yeah, he would. Yeah.
There's so many cute stories and things that Van says that Johnny tells us on air, and he's so sweet, and it's enduring, and you know what? Brings so much joy to the family. I was telling Johnny, you know what? This isn't a negative show at all. This, you know what? I think this may have brought your family even closer, because I noticed this, and I noticed, and what you said earlier about how Johnny is such a good person, I see that. I definitely see that. And I don't talk to anybody every single day, but I talk to Johnny every day. I would never even know if he didn't tell me that he had cerebral palsy. But, you know, I'm doing radio with him and phone calls with him. So, yeah, whatever your mom did and all of the research that she did and the care that she gave him and you and your dad, the whole entire family, the love and support you gave him, he turned out amazing. He's great. And you know what? It's not a retardation at all. It's like, I think that there's certain areas that he excels in more than other people by far. Just his imagination and his thought process, and he's detailed, so very detailed.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. And luckily, I think that that's all evolved, you know, from the 70s and from the – well, before, I should say, way before the 70s. But that's gotten so much better that they don't throw around that diagnosis you know, as much as they used to. I think that it definitely, you know, I think they look at the parameters of diagnostics differently now, and they don't just, I think they just didn't know what it was. And I know that my dad tells me a story when he was in medical school, that he was walking down the halls of residency and sort of, you know, here's an example of a patient with, you know, he's struggling with cancer, or here's a patient that is, you know, and he was, you know, in his psychiatric residency, but there was one person in a room that was rocking back and forth and self-stimming and doing these behaviors that are so, to me, so trademark, well, I mean, to everybody that's aware of what the diagnosis is and what the symptoms are, so clearly an autism diagnosis, and those are the traits, but you know, rocking back and forth and the self-stimming. And my dad asked, "Oh, well, what is this patient dealing with?" And the doctor said, "Oh, it's called autism, but don't worry, you'll never probably see another patient, you know, like that. It's just so rare." And I think that's what's so crazy, is that it's just so it's so much more prevalent now, but from what I understand, and I know there's varying opinions on it, there's a lot of different opinions about, you know, is it really increased that much in prevalence, or is it just being diagnosed more? It's just my opinion on it, but I feel like there is a bigger and broader awareness of it, and I think that a lot of kids probably back in the day maybe did have the diagnosis of something else or just MR diagnosis or something else, so they didn't quite know what it was. They didn't have the data. They didn't have the information that we have today and the communication that we have today to be able to share knowledge. So,
I
have a
couple of ways
about that.
We have.
There's a lot of social things that I dealt with when I was growing up. You know, a good example of it is that every time I would see my mom, I was worried that was the last time I was going to see her. So I would kiss her every time I saw her. Well, then one day we have somebody working on the tiles in our kitchen. And, you know, she looked just like mom from the back. And I walked up to her and I kissed a stranger. And to this day, that's like one of the famous stories about me. and Tasha.
Well, what did they do? What did they say? I mean, they probably didn't mind.
Yeah, they wouldn't have minded. The thing I know, I guess, with Johnny that's most, that I think Johnny has had to learn, that I would say that, and I think that it's something that, a lot of kids have it just instinctively, but I think this is probably something Johnny has more learned over time, like more learned behavior, is like reading social cues.
Yeah.
And things like that. Because I mean, I use this as an example. Like sometimes, like I would be taking Johnny somewhere in the car when I was in high school or something like that, and I'd be driving, and you know, he'd be talking about something, but I'd get kind of tired of talking, so I'd turn up the radio, right? That's just, you know, my cue that, hey, I'm kind of tired of talking.
Right.
Johnny
okay,
will start
yeah.
talking even louder, you know.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So it's like,
oh,
like a situation where. It, like, if Johnny, if you sat there and told Johnny, I'm tired, I don't want to talk now, let's just listen to the radio, he'd go, oh, okay. But he wouldn't necessarily pick up on the social cue that I'm, you know,
wow.
either looking like, hey,
right.
I'm tired, or I'm turning up the radio, or something like that. He would be more literal, like, listen to what
yeah.
I'm saying.
Right.
Oh, okay, Cassie doesn't want to talk now, Cassie's tired. He would more listen to me literally. And follow that, but I do think over time that's something he's learned, you know, like just
yes.
trial and error. But I think just by, you know, his nature, I think just it comes more naturally to other people where they just kind of instinctively mm-hmm. can like look at somebody's face and read their mood and read what they're feeling. Whereas Johnny,
right.
I think he's more literal. He'll more like what did they
mm-hmm.
say? They said they're fine. But, you know, and Chrissy, I don't know if you have any comments on that, like with your kids or with Sonny or whatever, about the whole literal issues or the
yeah,
social
that's
cues.
100%. Yeah, and Van's definitely and Van is our older son who has he has language, a good amount of language, and our younger son does not have as much language. But so it's harder to kind of read that with Alex. But with Van, he does interact with people. He's in a regular high school. He interacts with kids that are typically developing, but he also has a peer group that he goes to work study with that are in what they call a self-contained class, and that they don't necessarily go to visit all the different classes. They stay within because they need that extra help. But but when he does venture out into those other classrooms, when he's in the in the other classes with the typically developing, you know, kids or what they call, I guess, neurotypical, he does sometimes miss, you know, cues. And if he's coming up to somebody and saying, hey, you know, I like you, he's just very honest, which is so refreshing. And like I say, pure, like Johnny's pure as well. There's
yeah.
just a pure heart that you just
it
don't think
refreshing.
Anything negatively about anything. You don't expect anything negative from anybody. You don't put
right.
anything negative out there, and that's just how he is. And so when he goes up to somebody, he's pure of heart, just putting it all out there. But if the person is giving any kind of feedback that might not be just black and white, I mean, just, hey, I'm not interested, or that's not something I want to do, it's confusing to him. And I think you really do have to be pretty straightforward, you know, with that. So, yeah.
Okay.
I want to tell a story about Alex because, you know, I know that we talked about Van, you know, let me tell you a story about Alex. I don't know if you've heard this story, Christy, but this is a true story. I came into a room, and Alex was, you know how Alex is. Alex will, the nicest thing he's ever said to me is leave. Well, actually, that's not true. This is probably the nicest thing that ever happened. I came into the room, and, you know, I said, oh, hi, how are you? You know, I was just wanting to say hi to him. And then he went up to me, and then he goes, Beso, kiss. Meaning he wanted to kiss.
He said besos.
Yeah.
He wanted a kiss in Spanish.
So,
yeah.
So I kissed him, and then he went, I need my privacy. So what he was doing was
giving you a proper goodbye. Yeah.
Right. He acknowledged that I was there.
Yeah.
And let me tell you another story,
right.
Barbara. This is another story. This is a true story. You know, you imagine you have this kid. I know, Barbara, you have a daughter, but like this daughter doesn't say anything. And then one day your daughter speaks up and she says, I want to go to Atlanta and stay in a hotel. Okay. Out of the blue.
Just out of the blue.
Right. Now, I hope I'm getting the story right, Chrissy. You probably would go to Atlanta and stay in a hotel. I mean, what happened exactly with this story, Chrissy?
Well, yeah, that's what happened. He asked to go to Atlanta and stay in a hotel, and he doesn't say a lot. So when he does ask for things well, and he asks for things in a nice long sentence, he'll get it a lot of times. So
oh,
he said he wanted
wonderful.
To go to Atlanta and stay in the hotel. So we drove to Atlanta and stayed in the hotel, and he was happy. It's where he wanted to go. And his ability to ask for what he wants, and I think that's true with a lot of kids, you know, with autism, is that when they're motivated to ask for something, that's finally when language will come around, because they want something really, really badly. So the words will finally start to pull together a little bit. And so he will ask for things he wants, like food and drink or places he wants to go. And that's sort of the building blocks, is the hope that he will start to build more language just based on some of those basics. And he does. And Van, similarly, he will also be very clear and very motivated about what he wants. And he's similar to that story, Johnny, that you relayed about Alex, about being mindful of being nice and saying, well, I want a kiss, but I did want privacy. Like, you know, being polite about it. Is that Van is not often conscious of that either. He might just say, no, I don't want to go to the party, or no, I don't want to sit next to you, or no, I don't. And he's not thinking that he's doing anything negative or being hurtful. He's just being very black and white. Like, why would that hurt your feelings? I'm just telling you what I don't want to do. And to him, he's not thinking that through. But an example of how much he's grown, like over the last year, they make jumps just when we're not looking sometimes. They'll make these leaps that we're not quite looking for. We don't think they may or may ever do, but Todd was hugging on him, which he always does. We're always hugging all of our boys. It's kind of ridiculous. But anyway, we're always just snuggling with them and hugging on them. And Todd was hugging on Van while he was on the computer doing something else. And he just came up to Van and gave him a hug like he always does. And he said, my husband Todd said, I'm sorry, I'll quit hugging on you. Like, I know you're working, or I know you're doing something, I'll leave you alone. And just started to walk off, and Van came up to him, like got up from what he was doing and came up, and he said, you know, I love you, right? It's okay, like, for you to give me a hug, I'm fine. He just wanted to acknowledge that, yes,
wow.
I know you're giving me
a
hug, I was busy. It's a breakthrough. Like, I know, you know,
yeah.
I don't want you to be sad that you, you know, left the
right.
hug, you know. So it's a big deal. But there's things like that that happen, that we see like little glimpses of progress that come. And I think some of that is like what Cassie was saying with just learned behavior, just time in the world of practicing with other people and getting that experience. But a lot of it is, it's all learned. It's not something that's just coming by instinct or just naturally. It all has to be taught. But the good news being that it can be taught. And like in Johnny's example as well, he learned a lot, you know, just through
life.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's so good to know. But hopefully most families who have autistic children will give them the work and the love and the guidance and education and just work with them all the time. It's, you know, it's not hard work, just living and showing and cultivating this. And that, how wonderful is that? But not all families are like that. So then they can't even be diagnosed really in the right way, because not every autistic child is having the same upbringing and care. If one was with, it depends on the family, it seems like, because one would do so much better with a family like yours than another autistic child with a family that didn't work with them on anything and just kind of gave up on them. So is that true?
You know, I know that it's so challenging, I think, for every family, because it's so hard sometimes to identify early and to see what it is exactly. I know that a lot of families go through some denial, and I think that there's sometimes not a problem doing that, because there's a lot of ability and a lot of ways and means, I guess, that you don't necessarily have to be diagnosed. And I think a lot of times people don't necessarily want to have the diagnosis, but I think what comes with it are the services that I think are needed. But at the same time, I don't know that it's necessarily a totally negative thing if a family is not totally embracing a diagnosis, as long as they're kind of doing their own method of helping them grow and helping them develop. Because I've seen, you know, families that do that, that don't necessarily jump right into the, let me get the IEP at school, let me get the social services, let me do all of that. But they are doing their own way. They're kind of taking their own methods of more life experience or more, you know, just doing it in their own way, in their own time. And I've seen it work for them okay. And I guess sometimes it's just hard to know what would happen, you know, if you take one path versus another. But either way, I know it's definitely a tricky path for most families, and it's kind of tricky to navigate. And as far as being a parents and a mom and dad, it's definitely difficult, and it's stressful on a marriage, and it's stressful on relationships, because you're working together, and sometimes you do differ on opinions as to what to do, what should be done, and that can
yes.
be tough too. So I definitely see how that, you know, can be a strain on families.
Yes, but your mom and dad
yeah.
made it through just fine, and but how wonderful that this happened because of your boys having the same condition that you saw how your mom and dad worked with Johnny. So then that prepared you probably a lot better, didn't it?
It did. It helped me a lot to see how my mom worked with Johnny. And she did an amazing job. She really did. And I think that she, you know, I think Johnny's doctors early on were telling her, and I do wish she would call in, because I would like her to tell her part of that. But I think she felt like she was climbing an uphill battle just based on what it was they were telling her. It was not as, you know, as hopeful and bright as far as what he might be able to do, but she really was just determined, that's just not going to be a ceiling that she's going to be okay with, and that if she works all day, every day with him, then there is a possibility that he can make progress. And she was right. And I think that's what is now becoming a more accepted mindset, luckily, you know, for our kids and kids like ours. You know, I think that there is a mindset that there's not a ceiling at your birth. It's just not a destiny that's just set in stone. You can make progress, and you can learn, and these kids can learn, and they can grow up and become
yeah.
functioning adults that
and
have jobs and podcasts and all kinds of things.
Yeah,
yeah.
I was going to say,
another
okay,
was
what
gonna
do,
say,
how do you
like,
feel about Johnny doing the podcast? You must
yeah,
be very proud.
Of course, yeah. He's done amazing
wow.
things. His work and his he's got a great work ethic, and he is when he wants to do something and he sets his mind to it, he does it. So we're very
in college.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In
Johnny,
college.
Yeah, that
college
was a big deal.
And Johnny,
yeah.
I mean, literally, I mean, when my mom talks about when Johnny was born, it's like she said that, you know, that they didn't know if he would ever walk, you know, for example.
Right.
And he walked
yeah.
late. He walked. She said he was 17 months old before he walked. But she was
wow.
determined. She was determined. She's like, this kid is going to walk.
Yeah.
You know, but she
right.
said,
wow.
like, she's convinced if she hadn't just been so determined to do it, that Johnny could have just never walked. You know what I mean? Like, if she had given
mm-hmm.
up on him and
right.
been like, oh, this kid is never going to walk. They're right. You know? And Johnny walks around fine now. There's no issues.
Yeah.
yeah.
He walks all the time.
He does
so,
walk. Every day he does a walk.
He goes
right?
a walk, yeah.
yeah.
Johnny
yeah.
walks.
Yeah, every
yeah.
day.
Yeah, and so but there were issues. I think Johnny, too, mom said that when you were first born, they didn't know if he was blind. You know, because remember he had the crossed
right.
eyes?
Right,
and
yeah.
And she said he had very poor neck muscles, and so that he would kind of, his neck would just kind of fly, you know, lean back and stuff like that, because he didn't have the,
mm-hmm.
I guess, the coordination or the muscles in his neck to, I guess, lift it upright. And so they were just really worried. I mean, because if you think about it, my mom was like 23 at the time,
yeah.
having
yeah.
a kid with cerebral palsy. Okay, that alone, you know, and like I said, they weren't labeling the other stuff in the 70s. It was just Johnny's physical issues alone. And, you know, very young, she had two other kids. And then by the time, you know, a year later, she has Chrissy. She has another baby,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so it's a lot to be in your early 20s, you know, with a child with, you know, where the doctors are telling you stuff like, well, you know, he may never walk. He may be blind. He may not
yeah.
he may have to be institutionalized, you know. She
yeah.
like that, you know, because they really
yeah.
had no idea what my brother
no
was
idea.
Capable of.
Wow. She did. She went through so much, but it showed she was able to show her strength through that, definitely, because she was so determined. And wow, you know what? I think that has a lot to do with things, mental determination, and why your children turn out the way they do. Because the mom, she did not give up on him.
He literally would not have walked. She said that if she had basically not sat with him every single day, said, okay, Johnny, let's walk. You know, put you against the wall, walk to me, you know. And I think the rest of us walked 9 or 10 months or whatever. And Johnny didn't, you know, but she was just saying, no, this kid is going to walk. This kid will walk.
Oh.
And he did.
Johnny,
he was 17 months old, but he
did.
So, you know.
I mean, Johnny, that must really touch your heart that your mom really would not give up on you and worked with you like that.
Well,
many people would just give up.
Because it's funny because, you know, the walking, I didn't really think a whole lot. Driving, on the other hand, is an entire weird story. I mean, you know, I mean, when it came time for me to learn how to drive, that was awful. I tortured that guy. And, I mean, it's you know, it's like the name Mike Allison has ignited a lot of laughter in my family, and he's my driving instructor, and it was awful. I mean, you know, I was driving. I mean, actually driving, the thing was I'm not really such a big deal about driving now because I feel like I have a college degree, and I think that's going to probably help me out more than – I mean, well, I like the driver's license, you know. But I'm just saying, if I had to rank it, I would say, you know, because we have Uber now, you know, and that's a little different.
Yeah.
Like when I get
I'd
back
rather,
from
I'd rather know how to walk than drive. Okay.
Yeah, and they may. I mean, soon, John, they're probably gonna have the self-driving cars. So you know, Uber is gonna be getting around in self-driving cars anyway. So, yeah, you need to walk. You know, mom wanted to make sure that you were walking. And so, but, yeah, when you're that young, you know, to be in your early 20s and have this kid with a bunch of other little children and then basically be told, hey, your kid may have to be institutionalized. Your kid may be blind. Your kid may never walk. You know, I mean, my mom really, really had her hands full. And it's just she's so young, you know, because I'm older now, so I can really appreciate how young she was when she had Johnny. And what she went through to get him, you know, and she was not going to give up on him. And she went and got it, like we talked about. She went back to school when we were in school and got her degree in special education so she could basically help my brother. You know, and so she trained him. She stayed home with him 1 year. They had issues with my brother, you know, who's going to different schools and stuff to meet his needs and stuff. And there was 1 year where they couldn't, the school wasn't going to be a good fit for him. So my mom said, okay, I'm going to homeschool him for a year. So she used her, you know, her background in special ed. And the interesting thing, too, what Chrissy had said about our dad, who's a psychiatrist, you know, about the whole autism thing, you know, when he's a, you know, psychiatric resident, and they were acting like, hey, this is not, you know, autism, this is an unusual thing, you know, back in the 70s, they hardly talked about it. My mom says that when she went back to school in the 80s for special education, she said there was like a small paragraph in one of her books that talked about autism in children, you know. This is how much things have changed, you know. Back
now
they talk about autism all the time in special education. But back then, there's a small little paragraph that talked about autism, you know, and she said it was not focused on. And it just shows you how much things have changed in, you know, 40 years or whatever. But it's
that was in the early 80s, and it was like, you're right, it was like one paragraph, and it was in specifically a speech and language pathology, like a disorder that was so specific to speech and language, which tells you, like, that's not all it is. Like, the fact that that's all they had to go on at that point was like, oh, this is specifically a language disability. No, it's like it's something entirely different. So they've been figuring this out for a while, I think, just trying to,
hey, Chrissy,
to figure out what it is.
Didn't you say that they're saying that maybe that Bill Gates might be autistic?
I've heard that before. I've heard that about a lot of people who work with computers and, you know,
Gates,
a lot of people
Spielberg,
that are very skilled.
I know Dan Aykroyd is. Dan Aykroyd is. He's actually diagnosed. He's, I know Daryl Hannah is.
They're exceptional. You know, my friend Jenny McCarthy, she found out early that her son, I guess early diagnosis, but now after listening to you, I guess that may not even matter as long as, you know, they're working with the child in their own way, but working with them nonetheless. And she, so it's nice when there's a celebrity who's getting a lot of recognition who then is really working hard with their child and trying to research and bringing awareness to it. And so she did. She took time off of her career. And I love it when these moms do that and just, like, fight for their kid. And he's now, I think he just graduated from high school. He's doing great. He's more on the spectrum like Johnny, where he's going to be able to function very normally in the world. So I like that, that they've brought much more awareness to it, because they're so, it's very prevalent now. And even though they aren't really sure what causes it, is this true that they're not sure? But they, I think that I heard that they just proved that it's not due to immunizations. Am I correct on that?
That's right. Yeah, I think that the I think just the all the research that they've done and the studies, I think all the data at this point supports that it's not based on any vaccines or immunizations. So I think now they're sort of moving on to more research that is, I think, looking at what environmental effects could be going on. But I think it is, I think they're looking at a mix. It's a little bit of a of the fact that there's clearly a genetic something or other going on. That would, you know, what that means with something, you know, was it something that was altered genetically because of something environmentally? Not sure. Or is it purely genetic? I'm not sure. I think that that's what they're trying to figure out now. But I think the good news being that they're starting to look at the entire physiology, I guess, of the body and the brain and how it is being affected. They're able to study it so much better now than they used to, that I think the treatment opportunities will be good. I think we'll be better down the road. And by yeah. treatment, I don't mean a cure or anything like that. I mean just treating the symptoms. I don't know that I think that you would necessarily would ever cure autism. I don't know that it needs to be cured. I don't think it should be necessarily cured in that way. I just think that symptoms can be whatever it is in their life that is challenging because of autism, if that can be helped in some way, either through therapy or if it's medication or whatever it is that can make their life more livable for them, then I think that's great. And I think that's what they're trying to do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I want to say, Barbara, didn't you say that you have Priscilla nearby, that she wanted to say something?
Oh, well, she is always nearby. I will go to her room. But she has not been listening to the show, so you're going to have to give her a specific question, Johnny.
Okay. I want to know if she has any
Let me take out my AirPods so she can. Priscilla, we're on the show live.
Okay. This is my 12-year-old daughter, Priscilla, by the way.
Say hi, Kathy.
Hi.
And
hi, Priscilla.
Johnny.
Hi,
sister.
Priscilla.
I'm good. Hi.
Hi. Hi, Priscilla.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great.
Good.
What was the question you guys wanted to ask me?
Do you have any friends that have autism?
I have one friend, but I haven't talked to her in a long time.
So that they aren't asking about you if you've talked to her, tell them about your friend.
Her name is Hannah. I met her at my old school when I lived in Los Angeles, and we've been friends for a long time. I visit her once in a while with my other friend, and yeah, she's really nice. She has a really nice family. I love her house. She's just really
She's fun and funny, and she throws great parties. And her mom is one of those ones that does a really great job, too, with her. But it's all different. So I didn't know she had autism. I wasn't really sure what she had. But, you know, Priscilla kind of took her under her wing, and she sat by her in class. And so then I became really close with the mom because the mom was appreciative of Priscilla. And so we became really good friends, and Fat Mom threw the best parties. And all the kids loved going over. So that child, she does have a wonderful life. And, you know, we moved away, and it was so sad for her that she said, I want to go, you know, just like your son, was it Alex or Van, who said the complete sentence, I want to go to Atlanta and stay at a hotel.
Yeah.
That's what happened with this girl. She said to her parents, I want to go to Arizona and see Priscilla, because we moved from Los Angeles to Arizona for a couple of years. And they did. They got in the car. They took a road trip. They came out. They came all the way to Gilbert, Arizona, took us out to dinner, then brought Priscilla to their hotel. She did it overnight, and they swam. They had a great time. And that was wonderful. It probably had, I mean, she probably grew leaps and bounds just from that whole experience. And Priscilla, too. So it all is wonderful. And you know what? It's not so bad to be on the spectrum, because if you're saying that Bill Gates has it and these actors that you mentioned, Johnny, I mean, I think that you actually excel in certain ways when you have autism.
Well,
yeah, I think that a lot of
which is
very
interesting.
There's a lot of high abilities, and I think it's not uncommon to have special abilities in certain areas. Not all, you know. And I think actually, I was talking to a friend of mine about that the other day. That sometimes the kids that don't necessarily have, like, you know, special abilities sometimes get lost in the shuffle a little bit, because they don't necessarily have something that they're super, you know, excelling at, or something exciting that they have this special, unique skill. Those are the things you hear about within movies and TV and that kind of thing, that there's a special. And so I think sometimes when you talk to other parents of kids that may have kids that are functioning, you know, less high on the spectrum, they feel a little lost in the shuffle sometimes, because they say, you know, they're dealing with more of the day-to-day caretaking without the, you know, it's not like, I guess what they're trying to let be known is that it's not exactly like a thing, you know, it appears in the movies or on the TV shows,
right,
like The Good Doctor and Barbara, you know, the things where there's just super highly gifted, that a lot of times that's not their story. A lot of times there is, you know, a good bit of struggle going on. Yeah.
Yes.
You have a call.
Though they cannot be forgotten.
Caller.
Oh, great. Yeah. Okay, great.
Would you like to put the caller on? Okay.
Hello, this is Lori. How is everyone?
Hi,
hey.
Lori.
Hi.
Hi.
How's everybody doing?
Meet Cassie and Chrissy, Jonathan's sisters.
Nice to meet you, girls.
Now, Lori is a regular caller.
Oh, great.
She's always calling, so she's a friend of ours.
Thank you.
Oh, good.
I just wanted to say that after having been a school teacher, it's shows like this that are really, really touching, really, really heartfelt, because people don't know the other side of, you know, being an educator. And whenever you're an educator and you're blessed to be around such gifted people, because I've always found that the people that were on the spectrum were somehow gifted. They were gifted in some kind of artsy or artistic area, or they were interested in science. And as a school teacher, what I would do is I would try to focus on that area. And, you know, if they needed extra help, I was always willing to do something over and above board, you know, what was required of me, because they're just so artistic. And do you find that the people that are on the spectrum are lean more towards the arts, or is that just my perception?
You know, I've definitely noticed the creativity, and I think sometimes that is that they see and think different, and again, I'm generalizing, but I know that you know, like my son, Van, who is able to speak and kind of let me know his thoughts a little better, I know does think, and I'm using the term that Temple Grandin uses. She's the, have you heard of Temple Grandin? The she is pretty famous in the, or well-known, I guess, in the autism community, but she is a, I'm not sure exactly her age, but she now sort of spends her time traveling and speaking to people because she is, she was diagnosed when she was younger, and her mother, you know, worked with her and sort of honed her skills and her gifts. And so now she's excelling, you know, in many areas, but she used to use the phrase that she thought in pictures versus mm-hmm. the way that everybody else does. So the way that her mind works and the way that she can process information and create thoughts and be creative was through pictures rather than words, the way that we, I guess sometimes she says that we think, you know, or the neurotypical person might think. So it's just a different, so I do think that that allows for a lot more creativity. I think that that means that we're definitely going to identify what is coming out of their creative side is going to be unique because it's not like every, you know, body else, or they are thinking in a different way. And so that does definitely lend, you know, to that opportunity to be able to be unique and creative. And so I've definitely seen that in the artistic side. And sometimes it goes into other areas like computers or math or, you know, or dance. I mean, it really can be anything, but it is a different way of thinking that I think allows them to do that.
I agree, and I'm just so, sometimes I would get so overwhelmed because they're the things that my students would say to me, I was learning, and I was like, you know, I didn't see it that way. Thank you for, why don't we share this with the class? This is fantastic. And I just wanted to, that's what I wanted to bring to the conversation. Was that the creativeness and the ability to not worry about the surface things that other people do and to see things a lot more in depth. I've had some really good quality conversations with Jonathan, and he blows me away with how he talks about philosophy. We've had some deep conversations about science, about aliens, and it just blows me away. He always leaves me thinking, don't you, Jonathan?
Yeah.
I agree. I didn't even know until recently that Johnny even had autism. I worked with him for months and months. He told me about the cerebral palsy, but I didn't know. I really didn't know that, Johnny. So you seem perfectly normal to me. But
well,
I always,
you know,
thought you were kind of funny, like a little, you'd say quirky things and stuff, but I thought that was enduring, and I thought, wow, you know, that makes things more colorful. And you would just crack me up.
But, you know, like, for example, I mean, you know, it's sort of funny because, like, I've heard my father say, like, Alex, when Alex is in the water, you can't tell there's anything wrong with him. It's just...
Mm-hmm.
Alex, the one thing is that I have a feeling that Alex is either going to be a surfer or a bodybuilder. I mean, he's huge. And
he is big. I saw the picture.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like somebody that would be...
Yeah, he's a tank. He's a big guy. He's a big guy.
Wow.
And I think there's a story about somebody that used to take care of her named Celeste. Apparently someone was trying to come on to Celeste, and he says, I'm here with my boyfriend, and...
Yeah, she cued Alex to give the dirty look, and the guy left in a hurry. So he's the bodyguard when it comes to guys inappropriately approaching. Yeah, so that was his therapist. His caretaker had him out to lunch with him, and she's a very pretty girl. So there were some guys that were just not even noticing that Alex was sitting there with her and decided to hit on her right in front of Alex. She said, excuse me, I'm with my boyfriend. And he gave the look right on cue. Yeah.
Oh, how cute.
Yeah,
That coming from someone who has seen all kinds of different behavioral issues, different situations, just the gamut, the full gamut, I am just humbled with the show, and just really, really appreciative for everybody who got together to shed light on a very, very endearing subject. It's endearing because, you know, my heart remembers my pupils, my school kids, and it's good to have better understanding. And I'm so proud of the way that education has come forward and how everything is in the right realm, the way that it should have always been.
That's right. I absolutely agree with that. And I do think that education has come a long way. And I think that just the fact that they have inclusion classrooms now, classrooms that are not separate, or even schools that are separate from the neurotypical classrooms, they're putting all the kids together. They're keeping them together. And so now kids that go to a regular school don't think it's unusual to see the kids that are a little different in their same classroom, or might have quirkiness or autism, or, you know, whatever it is that they're dealing with. They're a little different, but they're used to seeing them in their classrooms from kindergarten up. And so then it's not such a big deal. So, you know, if Van decides he wants to flap his hands and get excited, I know when I was in school, that really would have stood out. I mean, in a classroom at my school, the kids would have said, "My gosh," you know, because the kids were in a different classroom. You just didn't see it. It was not the norm. And now in his high school, I've been there with him walking up and down the halls, and he can go into a full-blown flap session, jumping up and down. Nobody looks twice. These kids that are, you know, teenagers are not even batting an eye. And they're not noticing, and I'm thinking, okay, this is progress. It really is progress. They're not looking at him as something, you know, somebody unusual doing something strange. That's just Van.
Right.
And they know who he is, and they know how he is, and he has a bad day or he has a good day. They get it. They're like, that's just what he's going through.
Right.
And they're all very nice, very kind. Very few bad experiences with other peers and kids being not nice. And I think a lot of that is by example, with the teachers as well. And I think that is what's so important, Lori, also, that the teachers are showing good examples about how to not treat them differently and how to integrate them in the classroom, and to not point out the differences or make a big deal about the differences, but rather applaud them and sort of focus on why they're so great.
The education system can do a better job of giving teachers the tools. I did a lot of research on my own. I did a lot of, I gave a lot of myself my own time, because that's the right thing to do. It would have been better if the school would have supported, you know, a situation like that and said, well, this teacher is going to be spending an extra, you know, 5 hours a week, and that's a good thing. So many times, you know, with teachers and administration, there's always that constant conflict of teacher and administration. And I'm just so glad to see that all these things are finally clearing out, because whenever, you know, I was last teaching, which was in 2015, it was still rough going for teachers and for kids as well.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, I think the big shift has come, I think, because of the optimism and what these kids can do. I mean, I think there used to be very little hope, at least, that was expressed. And so I think a lot of times the educators and the administration just didn't put effort and didn't put energy into their growth and teaching. And I think that luckily has been a shift that's come down through the years a little bit. And I think with legislation and different things that they've done with the schools and with disability rights and so many advocates now that are just saying it's unacceptable to isolate, you know, these kids and eventual adults and keeping them in a box and saying that they're just not able to do anything at all. And let's just keep them fed and give them a bed and not worry about what else they can do. And I think that changed. And I think that's been the big shift that starts in schools. And so luckily they're trying to get that going. And I think it's definitely not perfect. I mean, I think that they're still working out so many issues, but I see the change that came from when Johnny was in school and when my kids are in school. And there's definitely been a shift, and I think it's for the better.
Well, and it's good for the other children, too, like you were saying, and that's sure. how Priscilla met her friend sitting next to her in class. It's so good for them to learn to be nice and accepting and all those things that you just said. It really, I was so glad to see that. I didn't know that they were doing that. And Priscilla explained it to me. Yes, mother, they're doing that now. And I said, that is so good. And now my best friend, since fourth grade, my best friend calls me. She moved to New York and she got a job as a special helper. Priscilla always called them the teacher, the helper. They sit next to mm-hmm. the autistic child. And so they're not like just put there alone. Am I correct by saying that with every child? Because her friend had a helper every single day sitting next to her. So it's an extra teacher. Was that
Van
what happened
does.
With your
Van
children,
has
Christy?
Mm-hmm. Van has an aide, a full-time aide, that does sit with him in class and goes with him throughout the day. And as of, say, 5 years ago, that was not offered as the typical assist for the classroom. It was basically either you went to the self-contained class and you were with, you know, a teacher and another two aides or so, but you were separated from the class. Or, you know, the new version, which, again, I think is definite progress, is that they're allowing these kids to have aides with them that shadow them in the class and sit with them in a regular classroom. And so they get the social interaction, they get to be around their peers, and they get to be kind of normalized into the day, but they have help because they do need help, and they still need help
right.
staying on task, and they need help with some of the academics. But she is very smooth and seamlessly kind of integrated into the classroom. And so she might lean over and help some other kids. So it's not like it's just for Van, although it kind of
right.
is just for Van, but she doesn't really make a big deal about, hey, I'm here for only him, but she is. I mean, she's basically there to help him. And she's the one that texts me throughout the day saying, hey, don't forget to send more pencils. Hey, he's having a rough time in math, or hey, he's, you know, and so I get that communication, which is more than I can never ask for anything more than that. That's just amazing. And so I know that they are doing that with some of the other kids that are coming up behind him from middle school. And they're kind of telling me the same thing, like, hey, you know, Van was a little bit of a pioneer with this because this was not available a few years ago. And he was one of those that just kind of fell in that little middle line that he didn't necessarily belong in a self-contained class because he needed to be challenged academically, but he couldn't hang, you know, in a regular class without help either. He needed that, you know, help as well. So he was sort of in that little middle ground that I think a lot of kids are in that just kind of get, you know, they fall in the cracks. And so I think that he has that helper and he definitely needs it, but I think that's been amazing for him to be able to
Good.
Kind of hang with other kids and make progress.
Strides. The schools are making strides, but it sounds like Lori didn't have such a good experience. How long ago were you teaching, Lori?
Last time was 2015, and I've got a big heart, so I didn't want those students to stand out. So I would let them sit there, give them another activity to do, and then I would do the one-on-one with them. And usually,
yeah.
you know, somebody in the
Go
administration would come around. Yeah, well,
but that's like you.
Because my kids used to call me mom, the little ones, because you end up kind of like taking the parent role. And, you know, however your kids are, they're your kids. And you're going to put your effort in there. Otherwise, I don't think you belong having – teaching is your vocation if it's not your intention
mm-hmm.
to go above and beyond. And if you see a need and, you know, if you've got the skills, now there's a lot of people who may or may not have the skills, but that's the gap that I was talking about where, you know, the schools would not provide enough. I could have used an aide in the classroom and not
mm-hmm.
so much just for that one student, but for the rest of the class, I would have said, okay, can you take over, you know, this part of the classroom? And I would have worked with, you know, the one or two students, you know, on my own and just had a really nice, seamless transition.
Well, that's you.
Right.
More people should be like you.
It's the right thing to do.
Each school is
yeah.
different, too. Yeah, absolutely. The supports
yeah.
vary so much school to school,
mm-hmm.
and that's unfortunate, it sounds like. But I know that we're from Atlanta originally, and I still keep in touch with friends there and that have kids also that are on the spectrum and are in public schools, private schools, and so I kind of hear both sides. But there's definitely better situations than others. I can hear some bad stories, you know, from really having to fight just tooth and nail to get some of the basics that they need for the classroom and to get all the kids served. It's a lot, and it is a lot, for a classroom if there's one or two kids that really need specialized care and there's just not enough staff to do it. The squeaky wheel gets the oil. You know, they're gonna fall through the cracks. And I think that happened with Johnny a little bit, and that's why he ended up doing the homeschooling with my mom. Was that he was in a classroom, I think, just getting lost in the shuffle, and she probably could tell that story a lot better. But I know that she was in touch with the school and realizing that Johnny was being allowed to just, you know, kind of twiddle his thumbs in the classroom while the rest of the class is doing their work, and they weren't necessarily pushing him the way that he needed to be pushed because
that
he was able to, but they didn't
grade.
Really.
That was more fifth,
fifth grade.
Grade.
Yeah.
And it hurt Johnny. Johnny told us that story. It hurt his feelings a lot. I've been talking to Johnny about that to help him get rid of those feelings and, you know, using techniques. And that's what's so great about this show for Johnny. It has totally made him grow and just fulfilled his life. And I just want to commend you, Johnny, for what you've done. You had an idea. You made it happen. And you've been doing this show for 12 years, and finally something gave, and it's like now exploding and coming together. And it's like Johnny and I are so excited every single day with what, I mean, in the morning he calls me up and what's going on today. We are excited. It's fulfilling me and it's fulfilling him. So I am just so proud of you, Johnny. And I'm so glad I feel honored to be here and work with you every day. And it was so wonderful to chat with your sisters and hear them. And also, I wanted to let you guys know that I saw the YouTube video of your family when you guys were little, and your mom and you were you wrote a script, like you wrote what was it, a soap opera? Could you tell us what the character's name you gave John? You gave Johnny a character name, and he would act in this with you.
Johnny, do you want to say you were Cash Wall Street?
Yes.
Cash Wall Street and the Rich and the Restless.
Oh,
it was the Rich and the Restless, yep.
The Rich and the Restless.
And
that's creative, you guys.
And we did a thing called Who Shot Cash Wall Street, and apparently it turned out that it was the guy who, the cousin who, it was actually Chrissy's character because she wanted to pitch. He didn't want me to take on the idea of the, I think it was like Barbie toilet paper company or something. What was it? Something
yeah,
like
we
that?
Were, I think we were basing it off the Who Shot JR scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we had the Who Shot Cash Wall Street spinoff. And so it was the Fufu Gabor and Fifi Gabor and Fufu Rabag, her evil twin sister. And Cash Wall Street was murdered like JR, so we had to figure out there was something about a Barbie toilet paper company too. We had a camera and a long summer is what it was.
I thought that was the greatest thing, and that your family is so close and your mom did such a great job, and I'm sure your dad too, to set that up, and everything was neat and orderly and everybody's kind to each other. It just was wonderful to see. So, wow, this really has been enlightening, I must say.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to hear from Chrissy that she notices in the schools that they're making big strides. And I'm glad that her child is able to benefit from that. And that he is like a pioneer, you said. So that is cool. That is wonderful. Is it Van or Alex?
Van. Van's the one in a regular high school. Alex is currently getting home therapy. He was in a school, private school for autism. Now he's doing home therapy, but next year he'll be starting at a place called Westonwood Ranch, which is a transitional vocational ranch down here that they teach some of the kids that are usually above the age of 14 and then to adulthood some life skills, vocational skills like working in the greenhouse. They have a hydroponics greenhouse and they grow lettuce and they sell it to local businesses down here. And they're going to start having recycling pickup in the neighborhood and taking that and mulching it for the horses that they care for and selling that. So the idea is to get the kids out there working and earning money of their own to kind of, you know, find some pride in work and have a purpose for their day rather than kind of getting lost in the system, which is what happens a lot of times when these kids turn 18. They have trouble, you know, they're no longer in the school system. They don't have that support from the school system. So they've got to find something else to do. And that is oftentimes they end up just staying home and not going anywhere and not able to do much. And so the idea is that they can find something they find a purpose with and that they enjoy and that they're good at and maybe even can earn some money doing. So, yeah, that's
wonderful.
His next phase. Yeah.
Wow. And
yeah.
So I think that all the listeners can really learn from you a lot. And if they want to reach out to us on our Life, Laughter, Happiness website with questions, there's a box there that you could leave your name, your email, and your question, and we'll get back to you. If we don't know it, we'll find it out, or we'll find somebody that can help you. We've got connections here, you know, obviously. So I would welcome any question. We have Lori, we have Chrissy, we have Johnny's mom.
Kathy.
So we'll find out the answer. And we have Kathy. We can find out the answer for you all if your child has autism and you just want to get some advice. So please feel free to do that. And Johnny, are you ready for me to do the shout out?
Okay, ready to go ahead and do the shout out.
Okay, I just want to thank you, our guests, Chrissy and Kathy, and Lori, who's on the line, too. Thank you so much for calling in. We love that you do that. And it was a pleasure talking and getting to know you. And thank you so much for all of the information. And we just love Johnny like you do. So this is a great show. And I just want to thank you guys so much for coming on tonight.
Well, thank you. It was fun. Thanks so much.
Well, I'm glad you had a good time. So everybody, don't forget to subscribe to us on our YouTube channel, Life, Laughter, Happiness. Stop by our Twitter, our Instagram, and our Facebook page. Drop us a line. We would love to hear from you. And you'll find out what's next always on our Facebook page. So check it out, or Blog Talk Radio. You can see the schedule there. So thanks, everybody. And thank you, Johnny.
Good night, everyone. Good night, Chrissy. Good night, Kathy. Good night, Barbara.
Good night, Johnny.
Good night, Lori.
Bye.
Good night.